Here we are, folks. I think everything's coming in live. We got, let me get a little mic check here. There we go.
Or did you test mine yet? Is it good?
Like, yeah. Distance? You, give me some.
Yo.
Oh, yeah.
It's good.
We're live, people. All right. 3, 2, 1. I am here with my favorite humans, a jersey transplant to Miami. He's quasi selling me a little bit on Miami. I was out there a little bit for a conference and dinner. Beautiful city.
Yeah, nothing not to like there.
Nothing not to. How long have you been there?
Close to 3 years now. So.
And you do you miss the hustle bustle of the East Coast?
The only thing I miss about New Jersey, New York, honestly, is the food and the beer, and then the cocktail bars. You know, like quaint little spots.
I'm
clubbing every night like in Miami, but find it difficult to find a good meal and just a good simple drink.
Yeah, Miami's very indexed on the fist bump.
Yeah,
very very peacocky.
Oh, yeah.
Lifestyle out there.
Sometimes you want just good food. You don't need all the glam and the glitz.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I don't know, New York. There's just something special about like the New York corridor over there, like the city, Brooklyn, even some cool spots in Jersey. There's a there. Weather sucks though.
Oh yeah, weather sucks. That's what drove me out.
Yeah, you can't be there. Okay, we kind of jumped the shark here a little bit. But John recently had a really awesome exit with your agency. Previously did your agency, and I didn't realize this. The agency came out of your brand incubations.
Yep, that's right.
So bring the people along for the ride. Let's get the John Snow chronology, if you will.
Yeah, so we'll give you the whole story.
Yep.
We won't touch on the dentistry side of things today.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah, and this guy's a DDS. Are you still certified and practicing? Or no?
Still have my license in New Jersey and New York. Never transferred it to Florida because I was like, oh, I'm not going to be practicing again.
Really?
So, yep. Still licensed.
Okay, so we'll plant a flag in the dentistry stuff.
That'll be for round two.
The military and dentistry. This guy has it all fucking renaissance.
So, I really got started on the influencer and affiliate side. Built an affiliate marketing platform about 10 years ago with my brother Dan that leveraged influencer pages on Instagram.
That's how Dan got into the rap TV.
Oh, yeah. The story is Dan was building all these big Instagram pages. Rap TV is one of them. That's what everyone
knows
his Instagram network for. And he had a realization. Smart guy. He picks up on things real quickly. And he's like, I have millions of followers. I know a lot of other pages that have millions of followers. Yeah. They were in all these like shout out groups, you know, amplification groups and whatnot. But he realized, and then there were influencer pages out there. No one was really monetizing their pages properly.
Yep.
So he's like, he saw the value because he had certain advertisers buying shout outs on his page daily. And he was increasing the prices week over week and they kept buying daily. So he's like, these things must be worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
So he came to me. He's like, hey, do you want to build this influencer marketing platform that essentially was just running affiliate offers through their pages?
Yeah.
So essentially buying placements on their organic pages. And so we had all these different offers and we were taking a cut and ended up working with all the biggest influencers on Instagram you could think of. One of the Kardashians was in our network, Black China. I was buying shout outs from Cardi B for $100 back in 2013, like right as she was coming up.
Wow.
We drove 9 figures in revenue through that platform within 2 years of launching it. That's why I was still a dentist, actually. I was doing this on the side.
No.
Yeah, yeah.
You were practicing.
I was practicing in the Air Force. So I had all this free time, like dentistry or like the dental clinic would open at 7 a.m. I was back in my apartment at 3 p.m. in the middle of nowhere in Louisiana. And I had all this free time on my hands. And that's when, you know, the timing was perfect. If this happened while I was still in dental school, there's no way I would have like taken this on with Dan. So it was just the perfect timing. And from there, we're like, oh shit, this influencer network. We have so much leverage now. Yeah. Why don't we start launching our own brand?
Yeah.
So we launched our first e-commerce brand. Built a Shopify store. We had no idea what we were doing on e-commerce. Didn't know how to even run paid media.
Yeah.
Didn't even buy media yet. It was just influencer. Launched that brand. You know, built a warehouse in my garage in Louisiana. Fulfilled orders out of my garage. Started with a credit card. Didn't, you know, raise a dollar of capital.
Really?
Yeah. And then drove 7 figures in revenue within 6 months of launching that brand. Profitable. Everything was profitable. We're like, holy shit. Why don't we launch another brand in a different niche? We could hit different influencers with it, right? So launch our second brand, same thing, 7 figures within 6 months.
Wow.
Like, okay, let's launch a third brand. And then we started getting deeper into e-commerce. Like, this is actually going to start taking off. So started learning email marketing, started learning Facebook ads, Google ads, the whole nine, landing page, creative, started mastering every element. Third brand, we hit it big with. It was an 8-figure revenue brand within the first year.
Grew
that to 30 million in revenue within 2 years of launching it. And then we launched a fourth brand, a fifth brand, and we started assembling a team, got a lease on a huge warehouse in New Jersey, ran our own fulfillment center for like 9 brands. We were fulfilling thousands of orders a day.
Holy shit.
And then, yeah, we did everything in-house. So we never outsourced any form of marketing or anything. And we got to start building a reputation and brands started coming to us to do the marketing. So we already had our whole infrastructure set up for our own brands, took on one brand and they referred a brand. And next thing you know,
the snow agency.
Yeah.
Wow. What was it like running a fulfillment? That has to be just a whole headache in itself, right?
That was the worst. That's definitely worse than practicing dentistry. That's for sure. I'd rather be, you know, in people's mouths all day.
Abscesses. That's way better.
Oh, yeah. Thousands of orders a day during Black Friday. I have pictures and videos I'll show you, but we got kicked out. We kept outgrowing every warehouse. So we started with like, it's actually in the same building as the Obvi guys. We started in Kearny, New Jersey.
What? Actually,
there was a little office before then, but it wasn't fulfillment stuff. Fulfillment was in my garage for a while until that I got outgrown. Then we went to Kearny and stacking boxes, floor to ceiling. There was no room for even a desk. It just turned into a fulfillment. And they're like, what are you guys doing? This wasn't a part of the lease agreement. You were going to be running a fulfillment center. Like it was an office when you were going to be fulfilling like 100 orders a day. The post office guy was coming. We were dragging bags of shit through an office building. It was like wild. So they're like, actually, you can do this, but you need to take over like 5 times the space. We're like, okay, we actually need this space.
Yeah.
So we moved into a different place in that building. Then they ended up just kicking us out because we had pallets of shit
in and out.
We were like, the elevators were just... No one in the office building could even use the elevator because we were just in those things all day. And then from there, we just went to Clifton, New Jersey, had this huge, like, I don't remember how many square feet, but it was massive. Shit was to the rafters. We had the biggest nightmare is that, you know, we weren't fulfillment ops guys.
So yes,
we had
yes.
all this theft. So, like, we had...
Shrinkage is a thing, dude.
Yeah, shrinkage is a thing. Workers is tough. Unreliable most of the time.
Yep.
So people call out, but you got thousands of orders to fulfill. And we realized one day, we're like, you know, the Ship Hero inventory levels don't add up. Like something's going on here.
Yeah.
And so we had cameras. So we just ran it back one day and we found out that some of the warehouse workers were taking bags of orders and instead of loading them onto like a truck, they were throwing them in the dumpster, pretending they were taking the trash out. And so they were filling up a dumpster throughout the day and they would just load it into their truck at the end of the day when everything closed, or they would come back later that day and it was all gone. They were doing this for weeks and weeks and weeks, and it was God knows how much money. Yeah, it was stolen.
That's an awkward conversation for sure. Yeah, the logistics business is, that's a whole monster by itself.
So that happened. We outsourced that. We ended up outsourcing that. And it's, you know, sometimes you run out of inventory during Black Friday. Like it's a nightmare. You know, if you're not scanning things in properly, you think you have X amount of stock and you don't. And
it's the other thing too, is you get really complicated with like bundles and stuff. How do you account for bundles if you're not pre-packed? That's interesting. Yeah. I think that is definitely the last thing I would bolt on in terms of incubating a brand is logistics, where you definitely get held over a barrel. Don't get me wrong, but there, like we were talking offline, there's more to cost than finance, where your focus and your bandwidth are honestly way more expensive than the finances. Like you can find money places. It's hard to get the team focused, or when the focus gets sporadic, it's just, there's some real knock-on effects of the business versus like, dude, I can figure out how to get money, but hiring, focus, and bandwidth.
Mistake that you make is going to be so costly. One costly, stupid mistake you make from a fulfillment op standpoint pays for the entire delta you're paying, the premium you're paying for outsourcing it.
So well put. That's so well put. And to you, because he's our resident finance whiz, macroeconomist, which I want to get into in our group text, but also just the peace of mind, dude. It's so nice to be like, hey, I have somebody to yell at. Like, this is your job and I'm going to go do this thing. Yep. Oh, that's so interesting. Do you miss the brand incubation? Because you don't, do you still have any or no? You divested pretty much all of them, right?
Over the years when we started, so we got to that inflection point where we had like 9 brands, we got like 9 clients. We're like, these are totally different business models.
Yep.
Which side do we want to be on?
Yes.
We can't scale both and spread ourselves thin. We're just going to, you know, we're not going to get anywhere with one of them. So at that introspective moment when we're like, you know what? We just love marketing.
Mm-hmm.
We aren't passionate about the brands that we're building.
Yep.
We're just really good marketers. We love selling the products. But, you know, we were just excited. It wasn't getting our juices flowing to, you know, order, you know, products, try to build out product line. We weren't product guys. We were just scaling guys. So we're like, okay, let's sell our brand. So over the years, we sold off all of our brands and, yeah, we just transitioned into an agency. September 2019 is when that official pivot.
Holy shit, man, you guys were so young.
Yeah.
So you went from zero to year five exit, or four, I guess.
Yeah.
Wow, that's incredible. If you're going to start a brand now, what it would be?
I was going to start a brand now. Wow, that's a good. It would definitely be a subscription heavy brand.
Love that.
So consumable.
Love that.
Ideally, it's a product that someone uses every day. So monthly subscriptions are in play. Because I've seen brand like CPG brands try to do like these like subscriptions that it's not clear when the refill is going to run out. And it's like, it might be 3 months, might be 5 months. I asked the brand owner, what's the lifespan if like someone uses every day? And they can't even tell me.
So yes.
Like, how are your customers going to know at what frequency? Like, they're going to end up having a monthly frequency or every other month, and they're going to start stacking it up. They're going to cancel that subscription, and you're just going to lose them forever.
Dude, that's such a nugget. And I, when I was consulting brands as well, that was one thing. Like, if you have a subscription, the closer you can get to that monthly cadence, the better. Because the death knell is like somebody loves you, but you just keep shipping, and then you're just and then you eventually have a warehouse of Huron or something like that. I love Huron. Don't get me wrong. I love my Huron warehouse. I just bought a bunch of soap. But that was my issue, is like, I think people buy with a no regret strategy.
Yep.
And that making a bad decision is way more scary to them than making no decision.
Right.
And so instead of subscribing, they're going to buy. I honestly think I'm old. So do you remember the OG Amazon buttons?
Yeah.
I thought those like now are kind of great, where it's like, I don't know, maybe we start a little Shopify thing, because I love like just being able to hit a button and like, I need it now and just ship me my stuff versus, because you take all they offloaded all the complexity to the merchant, and the user just hits this button and you just send me the stuff. Because I'm with you, man. I have so many products that I love that I have zero subscriptions for, because I just bulk buy because I don't know when I'm going to run out, how I'm going to run out, how I'm going to consume it. Okay. Consumable, subscription heavy. What else you got for me?
I would say low SKU store, like low SKU, like not a lot of flavors or sizes or variables to it. And I would start with, like, if I'm a brand starting out, I might only want to start with one SKU or two max.
Hero SKUs, the path.
Last thing you want is close to 10 SKUs. You don't know which one's your hero product. You're testing all of them. You're having tests that aren't like statistically significant. You're calling them too early, and you just create this storm of like, I don't know what the fuck's going on.
I couldn't agree with you more. And honestly, I've worked in a lot of big SKU brands. Dude, it's that Pareto principle where 20% of the SKUs are generating the 80% of the product. So it's like, these SKUs are okay, but they're almost, or in my experience, they were essentially passion products of the owner. Where they're like, this is a really cool product, we should have this product, blah, blah. It's going to break even. Or, because the other thing is, I don't think every product has the anatomy for paid media as well. And so I'd work in, you know, 20, 30 SKUs, and we would only have two SKUs that we would run paid ads behind, because everything else, the math just didn't math. Like, the economics didn't make sense, where it's like, yeah, I can sell these, but I'd always have this like thought experiment of, if this scales, like, would I be happy?
Yeah.
And the worst thing you can do is have success, scale it, and you're like, oh my gosh, we're selling $10 bills for $20. Right. Like, it doesn't, you can't do that in perpetuity. It just doesn't work out. Okay. So low SKU, what's the vertical?
The vertical, honestly, it would probably be in like a supplement space.
Okay, we're starting one. This is literally my whole the exact thesis.
Because like, if it's functional, if it's like, if there's a problem solution, it is so easy to market. If there's like, I'm not saying it has to be like a before and after, but like a probably a before and after thing. But as long as it's there to do something, there's like an active ingredient that's exciting and functional, and there's like a whole story behind it, going to be easy to sell.
I mean, so I used to work at a company called Onnit, and that was their hero product was Alpha Brain. And it's exactly what you're talking about. And I think it said a different way. It's an easy story to tell yourself or somebody else why you're buying the product.
Exactly.
And so it's like, oh, I have this. Is that me? Am I? Oh my gosh. Hold on. I'm like, can't believe this.
Hard to keep track of like 8 phones over here.
I don't know why I'm a key D&D guy, but the time I had to
make sure I didn't miss your text. Gotcha.
I'll never live down the shame. I'll never live down the shame. Okay. So now I want to kind of dive into a little bit tangential to the brand question. How heavily do you build a brand, or do you take into consideration the effectiveness of TikTok shops? Because you have, I was never bearish on TikTok, but it was kind of AI where I just, I couldn't formulate my thesis on it yet.
Yep.
And you've given me so much clarity there. And not only TikTok shops, but TikTok SEO is real.
Yeah.
And I would argue if I was indexing on Google SEO or like web SEO, Google SEO, if you will, and TikTok SEO, I think there's way more upside to TikTok SEO. So would you factor that into your brand building of, oh, this is going to be a brand that can really heavily penetrate TikTok and TikTok SEO? Or do you think that's more of an ancillary consideration?
Yeah, I would say the TikTok SEO is definitely an ancillary consideration. I wouldn't bring a brand to TikTok shop just for
that. Got it. Okay, tracking.
That's like an extra value prop for being on TikTok shop.
Yep.
Like you're going to get this whole organic search volume traffic to your shop just because of non-brand keywords.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Would you want an influencer or distribution at the center of this brand?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, with TikTok shop in general, the two main like unique drivers behind TikTok shops is it's all about virality.
Yes.
Without having to deploy media dollars. So
yes.
I have always been bearish on TikTok ad platform.
Yes.
I still am.
Same.
That's not what excites me about TikTok shops. I see TikTok shops scaling right now through organic. So the brand posting frequently on their own page.
Yep.
And the influencer affiliate network on TikTok shops.
Yep.
So if I'm a brand today, I'm not working with any influencers unless they are TikTok shop affiliates.
Interesting.
So yeah, because there's one-to-one attribution. So like when an influencer is posting and tagging a product, obviously that the consumers are going to be buying it on the TikTok shop.
Yes.
They'll be clicking the product that's in the video. They check out on TikTok shop. You have one-to-one attribution. And in TikTok's analytics platform, you can see where all of your revenue is attributed. Is it from your brand's organic page? Is it from the influencer's organic post? Which influencer's post is doing well? You get all these metrics and attribution is solved. And TikTok literally tells us that the algorithm is favoring brands that are tagging products in their posts, and they're favoring influencers who are tagging products in their posts. And brands that are posting more frequently and influencers that are posting more frequently are also getting rewarded in the algorithm. So they're creating this ecosystem where if you're just investing in TikTok and just building there, whether you're an influencer, you're doing a lot of creative on TikTok, you're building TikTok first. And if you're a brand and you're posting every day, multiple times a day, the chances of you going viral and just getting free impressions essentially is astronomically higher.
Yeah, I mean, the mental model I use almost is you're buying essentially lottery tickets for free.
Yep.
And so why not try it?
And you want to test creatives, right? Like everyone talks about like blowing money on creative testing on Facebook. Don't even do your creative testing on Facebook. Do it on TikTok organic. Do it on your TikTok influencer pages. Whatever engages well there or performs well, use that as your filter for what you're going to then test on Facebook, since it's almost like a $0 cost way of testing your creative and your theses.
Man, I love that. I love that. Speaking of media buying, you just dropped, go follow him. What's your handle?
On Twitter.
On the Twitters.
Dr. Jonathan Snow.
Dr. Jonathan Snow, DDS. Go get it, folks. You just dropped a really interesting thread on Bid multipliers. I don't think a lot of people know about them. I knew quasi about them, but they were so new that I never deployed them. Give the listeners a skinny on those, and then when you would apply them.
Yeah. So I just put out a great thread on Twitter, like Robin said,
for me
to go read through all the details. It's a lot more detailed even than what I put out there. But long story short, Meta only has certain amount of data that they can use, right, for in the auction and everything like that. You know LTV of all the different, you have all this first party and zero party data.
Yep.
You know if men or female are worth more money.
Yep.
You know if iOS or Android devices might convert better or have more lifetime value on the back end or have maybe a higher average order value. You have all this granular data that you can group into different cohorts essentially.
Yep.
And if you know that group A is worth more than group B, you can now tell Meta that in the form of a bid multiplier.
God.
So let's just say females are worth 30% more on lifetime value than your male customers. Meta has no idea. So they're just going to, you know, if you're running, you know, $100 bid, they're just going to bid $100 for everyone. But you're like, you know what? I actually, I want females, I'll bid 30% more, since they're worth 30% more. You tell Meta that, and so the bid cap is like 1x, you can't go past it. So you have to do a little bit of math where, you know, the females, you'll bid at a full 1x, and then the males, you'll do
7% or whatever.
Right? And then, so now Meta's algorithm knows, and this helps you consolidate your ad account, consolidate it. Right? So like Meta doesn't want you to over-segment and do like, oh, one ad set, we're going to females, and we're going to set, you know, a bid at this much, and then the males, we're going to do a different ad set, because then that's destructive. You're spreading the data thin. You're not consolidating. That's almost like reverse best practices right now. So now you just run a broad audience, but you give the algo all of these little nuggets.
That's so interesting. Is this dependent on scale or spend? So will this work in kind of the smaller to mid-tier businesses, or do you need to be doing snow numbers?
So yeah, the most, I would say that the biggest thing is it really depends on how much first-party data you have. So
got it.
If you truly have a good data infrastructure, first of all, the data needs to be reliable. Last thing you need is to run, you know, bid multipliers on bad data, right? So if you have a data set that you can trust and it's big enough to where it's statistically significant, you know that females are worth 30% more than males, and you're spending on Meta at least, I would say, 100K a month in ad spend on Meta, and you're confident in the data set, then it makes absolute total sense to be at least testing it against your business as usual. And Meta has the exact framework of how you should be running a bid multiplier test versus business as usual.
Yeah.
Super simple. There is a little bit of legwork getting it off the ground. There's, in my tweet thread, you'll see like three ways of activating bid multipliers, either through like a Meta business partner. They have their own like Meta dashboard, but then you need to create like a Meta marketing app.
Yeah.
Or just through the API. So if you're buying media through Meta's API, those are the three ways. So it does take a little bit of legwork off the ground, but if you're spending that 100K a month.
Oh, that's cool. You could do it through the API. So there's possibly some semblance of a feature built into a business that layer deploys it and kind of builds it into your bid strategy.
Right.
That's so fascinating. Yeah, I never really mess with them, but that makes tons of sense.
I talked to a few titans that I really trust whenever I have these like these big questions or before I start you know, testing, because I get their feedback. They're running.
They've been doing it.
You would never know. And no one talks about it. So,
man.
Yeah. Our Meta rep, you know, I've been speaking with our Meta rep at the agency, and he's like, you know what? You guys should really start testing some of these accounts that would really take it to the next level. And I've always been a skeptic a little bit, but. Yeah. I've seen it. I've talked to the right people, and it makes total sense, right?
Yeah.
It especially makes sense with the consolidated ad accounts now in Advantage Plus. And
well, and I would argue too, that's always been the missing link in the algo, is not necessarily the estimated action rate, but that value vector. And so now you have this value vector, and you used to be able to kind of hack it together back in my day, but now that there's a literal direct line to the algo, that makes tons of sense. Huh, that's fascinating. I need to start playing around with, maybe I'll throw some money behind the merch store. That's really interesting. Speaking of media and agencies, big news coming out of Boston. Klaviyo is doing professional services.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? Because do you guys offer email?
Yeah, we offer email and SMS.
Because you guys are full stack though, right?
Yeah, we have like the highest partnership here with Klaviyo, actually, and Attentive. We like both.
Okay.
I'll say right off the bat, I'm not upset that Klaviyo did this. It makes sense.
Yeah.
They've just been, they rolled it out really poorly.
I thought that the community...
We were totally blindsided. It's like, what? We just get an email, and it's like, that's like a much bigger deal to where, like, before that email goes out, like, your partners, at least the top partners, should be consulted.
100%.
So it really depends. Like, they didn't say we're only... The arguments right now are like, oh, they're only doing this for enterprise. But they didn't say that to their partners. Don't you think if they knew that their partners would get upset or frazzled about this potential decision, they would allay those fears by saying, you know what, we're only doing this for the 0.1%.
100%.
We need to penetrate X, Y, and Z, you know, billion-dollar companies, and this is the only way to do so, and that's our intention. We're only going to live there. That makes total sense. That's transparent. I think if they start rolling this up and down their book, like whatever brands, you know, whatever mom and pop store onboards a Klaviyo that has zero in revenue and just going to pay that to get their templates off the ground or their flows off the ground, Klaviyo is going to nuke themselves, because they're going to piss off and alienate all their partners, because now their target market is every brand.
Yes.
They have, what is it, 150,000 active clients right now? So imagine how much they're going to have to scale their service teams. So now they're getting into this whole, like, are we a tech company? Are we a service company? Margin compression, which the stock market will hate.
Will hate.
And yeah, and the multiple. If you're not a software business and you're blurring the line on and straddling both sides, then like you're destroying yourself in two areas, but then you're going to start alienating all your agency partners. And that's how you got there. So you cut off that your main engine for how you rose to IPO as a multi-billion dollar company. And they start going to the more, you know, agency and marketer friendly companies that, you know, I'm not going to name any names, but everyone knows that these other companies are out there and rising kind of in the background. They're kind of like the ESP for the people, right?
Yeah.
Like, Klaviyo started encroaching on this like villain territory, which is a very dangerous place to be.
Yep.
Because that's where the allegiances start shifting.
Yeah.
And if they're more expensive than their counterparts and they're, you know, the relationship isn't there anymore, they could be nuking themselves. So.
Yeah, no, I no notes on the take. I do think it was the right call, but I think to your point, the comm strategy was absolutely atrocious. I felt almost the same thing when I was running at Triple Whale and we had changed our pricing. It was actually great. Most of the people were actually going to pay less. There was all these actually big nuggets that were awesome and we just rolled it out terribly and all this backlash. And so I think that's absolutely right. And I also think, to your point, it would behoove them to play in the enterprise because those people are giving them the most money. And this is one thing that I was shocked by, where they only have around a little over 1,500 people giving them $50,000 a month or more, which was like, wow, that really sized the D2C market for me, where it was just like, there's just not a lot of and what we would call enterprise. I mean, I would argue, I don't even know if there is an enterprise brand in D2C, because what I consider enterprise, Target, Walmart, Home Depot, like these are proper balance sheets where it's like, you know, even Hexclad, what, even on the high end, and I'm just making numbers up here, they're going to do $500 million across their whole, like,
That's not enterprise. That's enterprise for D2C. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying, right? That's I'm trying to figure out this, like, is it D2C enterprise S&P term?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's kind of interesting. So now I don't know. I think it's definitely the right move, but I think the wrong rollout. So yeah, we'll see. And I think the lockup's about to expire. So I don't know. Not stock advice, but there could be some downward pressure.
Here's where it could really get weird. And actually, this is probably the biggest point. If they are going to be scaling their services teams, there's two things that are going to be really detrimental to them. One is if, obviously, they're going to have service teams with sales targets.
Yep.
Which means they're going to be going after clients on LinkedIn, Twitter. And they're not going to realize that their agency partner, their platinum, whatever, master platinum, titanium partner services that client. And they're going to be, you know, who knows what type of access these service teams are going to have too, even if they're not managed clients, and start talking crap about their agency partner. Like, that could get to a really weird place where agencies just totally jump ship from them if it's executed poorly from that perspective. But then the other side, if they're scaling that service team, they're inevitably going to start hiring from agencies. So imagine Klaviyo came. If they poached one of my teammates, I'm done. Klaviyo, we're done. First of all, probably like a non-solicit place as partners. But like, that's bound to happen. And even if it doesn't happen that aggressively, which I doubt they would ever do, because that would be extremely destructive for their reputation, it could happen indirectly. One of my employees could apply to go to Klaviyo, and then I'm going to be upset that they hired, knowing that they're coming straight from us, right? So there's this whole gray area of like just talent procurement and allocation that is inevitably going to be crossed.
And I think it could get into a really weird place too, because they have some economics they can subsidize.
Right.
And so then they can start to distort kind of market rates in a way where it's just like, well, Klaviyo offered me $1.80 and you're like, you're making $1.20. It's like, dude, I can't pay you more than that. I love you. I want you to be here, but they're overpaying. And you get into this really interesting kind of talent scarcity where, they're just going to start to distort market rates when you can throw, I mean, it's a gorilla in the
like
room.
It's like Silicon Valley software engineers, you know what I mean?
It's exactly it. So,
price, so.
I don't know. Yeah, it's such an interesting one. What do you think, like, do you have any predictions for this year? Like, you're one of my favorite followers in terms of, like, I was teasing earlier about the macroeconomics, like, What are you seeing? Because consumer confidence is quasi falling, but god damn, it feels like 21, right?
Yeah.
Like, shit's ripping, dude.
The stock
like,
market's ripping.
Shit is ripping right now.
is definitely not aligned with what's going out, like boots on the ground right now. I feel like 2021, the market was exploding, but you know, every business is just growing. E-commerce, services, tech, it was like, you know, you're just swimming in this ocean of opportunity and like you can't do anything wrong.
Yes.
Even if you're doing shitty, you're still growing year over year and you're profitable and the ecosystem is so different. Now it's like stock market's at an all-time high. Well, crypto is right there with it. But I feel like businesses in general are not on that same ride. The Magnificent Seven, like AI boom and NVIDIA and, you know, AMD, these are the guys that are carrying the stock market. It's not so much like the rest of the S&P 500. Well, shit. Actually, the two weight loss drug companies, Eli Lilly has been exploding too. And what's the other one? Novo Nordisk.
The Ozempic.
Yeah, Ozempic. And what's the Eli Lilly one is?
It's Indianapolis. It's my hometown.
Yeah. They have the other one right now. I don't even remember the name. Clearly, I don't take weight loss drugs. But my dad is. So,
there we go.
He's like, oh, Eli Lilly's exploded up 100% in the last like 5 months. Yeah, I've been taking this.
Wow, I didn't know that. They're monsters.
And they're a dividend crusher too. So like they're paying dividends, they're growing 100%. Damn. Like you go look at their stock chart, they look like
stock.
It's insane. You only have crypto like during the crypto.
I mean, to be fair, NVIDIA too, right? 268% growth.
Yeah.
At those numbers, like the math just doesn't even math. Like my tin hat foil conspiracy is like they might be the next Enron. Where there's no way this business is that good.
Yeah.
Dude, it was at 600. I was like, no way.
I've been selling on the way up.
That's probably the best way to do
Nvidia
it.
Since 2015.
No!
I'm up like 2,000%.
What is this? A 20 bagger?
Yeah. 2,000%. So I just sold at 800. Now it's at 880. Sold at 800 like a week ago. Now it's up another 10%. That's a big loss right now. I'm happy to offload on the way up.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to do it.
Into index funds and money market.
Yeah.
I'm a compounding type investor. Like these companies aren't going to grow forever. The second they have a bad earnings report, they fall 40%.
100%.
And then they're value stock and it's never going to keep growing.
So. That's so interesting. So do you have any kind of, do you think like it's an election year here in the States? Do you think that'll have any impact on, kind of, because from my take with election years, the worst thing that can happen is you don't know who's going to win.
Right.
Because then you get the pearl clutching. If you know, like, you know, not to get political, but if you know a Den goes in, your taxes are possibly going to go up, things of that nature. If you know a Republican's going to go in and say, fuck it, we're just going to rip. And you can strategize and put your portfolio and deploy your capital knowing kind of the litigation that's in the pipe.
Mm-hmm.
But if that doesn't happen, you can start sometimes to see like a Q3, Q4 freezing effect where people are just like, hey, let me wait and see until election season happens and we see who's the president, his or her cabinet's going to be.
Market strategy now, or are you talking
because I think there's definitely, and maybe I'm wrong, but there's definitely some macroeconomic linkage to D2C, right?
Like ad costs are absolutely going up in an election year. So like, I mean, that's one prediction that's tied to like macro is like ad cost CPMs.
Yeah.
I actually just posted this in my newsletter this past week. CPMs on every ad platform have been negative year over year over the past 2 years.
Really? Yeah. And Facebook just pumped out the craziest earnings. Jeez.
But my prediction is that all of them go up this year, maybe except Pinterest. So like Snapchat, it's all the publicly traded. It's like the big four is Google, like CPC, you know, Meta, Snap, and Pins.
Yeah.
TikTok doesn't report, but you know, we know that they're probably in the same boat, but they all had that, like, you know, in 2020, 2021, year over year growth, and then boom, cratered once the macro shifted and ad dollars pulled back. It was negative year over year for 7 straight quarters. Then I think it was Q4 of 2023 was the first time, like, I think Meta and Google went positive. I think Snap, Google, Meta are positive every single quarter in 2024, year over year.
Yep.
Pins increased ad load this past year, so like they're like really negative.
Dude, I lost so much money on Pins.
Yeah. Pins stock. They're tough. I feel like it's actually big that they're going into the Google ad platform. So like it's going to give exposure to brands that are very hesitant to go buy on another platform. And
I think it's interesting with the Pins stuff, and I agree with all those takes. I think that's spot on. And for people that don't know why it's so impactful for us as media buyers or in the media space when you have political election years or big congressional seats or whatever. when you give money to a political campaign or when that political campaign gets money, if they don't spend it, they lose it. And so they will just go full fucking send no matter what the efficacy is of it, because if not, they literally have to figure out a way to redistribute these funds because legally they have to spend it. And so there gets into kind of going back to distorted economics. You get into this place of like,
that you have election year, overlay that with Temu in China jacking up ad spend. No. CPMs are going way up. And yeah, so ad costs are definitely on the rise. So that's one big prediction tied to macro.
What is one big opportunity that you're looking forward to? And what is one big thing that keeps you up at night?
The biggest opportunity, honestly, right now is TikTok shops.
Yeah, I think you're up there.
So that's like the biggest blue ocean right now for e-commerce brands. Especially for brands with like I'm seeing AOV under 50 is like 50. That's really like.
I was going to ask you, is it a function of price?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, okay. I've seen brands work really well over $50, even over $100. I wouldn't say if you're a $500 AOV brand, don't test TikTok shop. It's free. It's literally free.
Fair play.
Have your organic page cranking. Fair play. Right? Like TikTok's only, you know, it's gaining more and more. Like Gen Z's on it, obviously, but like the older people are. My parents use TikTok.
100%.
So it's only going to grow the daily active user base. So like if you're a growing brand, you need to have an organic presence. Launch your TikTok shop. It's a few hours of work max, depending on how many SKUs. If you're a high SKU store, I would not just launch all your SKUs.
Yes.
Launch 10, launch 20 max, and then see what goes on. But like, so the opportunity on TikTok shop is just under 50. I see these brands cranking. The number one TikTok shop, I'm not going to name them right now. They don't even run paid media.
It's the oil pool guy, right? He's printing.
Yeah. Zero ad spend.
Video game numbers.
And it's a flywheel. So like once you open your TikTok shop, once you get a few influencers to work with you and a few do well and they start selling products, other influencers see those influencers posting it and printing money off it. Now they apply to work with your brand on TikTok affiliate platform. It's like an open collab. So it's just that once that flywheel starts going, I mean, these brands like, and even an enterprise brand, Tarte Cosmetics, I posted about them. They did over 10 mil in TikTok shop revenue in less than a year, zero ad spend, just from live shopping and all this stuff. So
they were getting wrecked on the Twitterverse about, they just had that like big influencer event, I guess. And it did horrible. TikTok shops, I'm 100% with you there. I think you totally changed my mind on the TikTok SEO thing. I think that's something that at worst, dude, just get a dedicated resource. And like, that's what you do and almost operate autonomous of the, or not autonomous of the business, but you get what I'm saying? Like just go hunt and kill. It's almost like your AE. Oh, yeah.
So like, here's a good example. We set up a TikTok shop. This brand has zero brand awareness. They didn't even exist. We were launching them. We built their Shopify site, built their TikTok shop before we even launched their website. Before we even launched their organic page, we just set up the TikTok shop product listings just to make sure they were there, whatever. Next thing you know, like I look at Seller Center a few days later and the product listing somehow had hundreds of views. I'm like, what the hell is going on here? No ads are live. No influencers have posted yet. We don't even have a post on the organic page. We haven't even uploaded the profile picture for the brand on the TikTok.
You're already getting these impressions.
And we just looked and it was all organic search for the non-brand keywords. So they were already showing up as the number one brand on TikTok shop whenever you searched their product category.
Wow.
Just because we did proper TikTok SEO on like a product title. So here's like another nugget. If you're setting up your TikTok shop, TikTok does an amazing job at telling you like where you're missing out on SEO opportunities.
Yeah.
So they'll tell you like what the keyword volume is related to your products that you're missing out on. And they'll actually say like, add this word to your product title. Add this, and like you can just click accept suggestion.
Wow,
boom! And like now your brand is just little things like that, not a lot of competition. So, like, right now is like that arbitrage moment.
Yes,
TikTok shops.
I love that.
I don't think it's going to be there a year from now. So, it's like if I'm a brand, I'm rushing to get on that platform and just crank it.
Algorithm's
not going to be there forever either, like favoring TikTok.
Exactly. No, it feels a little bit more so. Yeah, exactly. Right. What keeps you up at night?
What keeps me up at night? That's a good question. Well, the stock market always does now, but
DCA. You thought it DCA?
It used to until DCA, and that's it. Dollar cost average, index funds, money market. While the interest rates are high,
if you're rich right now, you literally can get paid for owning a house.
Oh, yeah.
You just park it in a 5.5% APY, and your mortgage is 2.2 or something.
Seven figures a year on your dividends from a money market.
It's insane.
your money should not even be in a bank account.
Yes.
In a money market fund. Anyhow, so what keeps me up at night? That's a good question. I would say just the approach of marketing as a whole right now.
Okay. Like
omni-channel holistic marketing, and just like deciding where to deploy dollars. But that's also where AI has started to come into play. Like there are some companies right now building.
Prescient guy is doing some really cool stuff, right?
Prescient has been under the radar for a while. I've seen their product and platform grow over the past couple of years. And they're at a point where they're about to start.
I think that gets interesting.
That's going to get interesting. So it's like if you're a brand, you have, you know, over $1 million budget a month, you're like, you know, am I overspending on Facebook? Am I not? Should I be deploying some of that Facebook budget on TikTok? Should I be adding incremental budget on TikTok?
Yep.
Should I put some on pins? Should I? AI should be telling you all that, right? So it's like trying to do that as a human, as like TikTok Shop is cranking. Now there's halo effects on Amazon sales and halo effects on Shopify. So like all these things and trying to do that as a human and, you know, build a team and have everyone educated on how that works. I would say like, piecing all the data together has been what keeps me up at night, because I try to I go down every rabbit hole you possibly can go down, and that combined with like we built our own data platform actually on top of Source Medium, great analytics company, infrastructure company, and like trying to perfect our dashboard is what really keeps me up at night, and like just making sure the team is adopting it and everything is in the right. That's what's been keeping me up.
No, that's such a good answer, man. And I think you're absolutely right with the AI stuff where. It's just a way better job for AI than a human.
Yep.
Because it can become this neural network where no matter how many dashboards you have, like it's going to have way more data up to date, real time. And you see it now too, because it's almost like the Bernie Madoff, where ASC campaigns are that Bernie Madoff, right? Where it's just like, hey, I can't tell you how it's working, but if you put a bunch of money in this black box, I'm going to deploy your paid media in a really efficient way to get you 20-30% returns every year. And like, you don't want to do it, but you're also like, I see John's making 30% returns a year. Susie's making, all right, Bernie, take some of my money.
Right.
I think that gets into a really interesting place. And I don't know if it's necessarily even a bad thing. I think everybody that says AI is going to take their job, I don't think that's correct. I think the thesis that I believe is, or the thesis I'm betting on is, somebody that uses AI is going to take your job. They're
right.
augmenting their self. Yeah. And so I think
they're freeing up their own mental bandwidth to focus on the higher level strategy.
I can get creatives. I can get work on my landing page experiences more.
Work.
Exactly. And I think that is going to get into a really interesting place because, I mean, candidly, that's what we were talking in the car. I think a CMO's job is get momentum or keep momentum and efficient deployment of capital.
Yep.
And I think if you make that efficient deployment of capital easier and easier and easier, get to some really interesting places really quickly. But man, those are good takes.
Actually, that just, you answered my question. Your own question was what keeps me up at night most. It's actually keeping up with the change.
That's fair.
So all these things that are coming out, all these AI innovations, all these new tech tools, whatever, keeping up with that and then changing our processes and systems on the fly when I know that like, hey, X, Y, and Z has been working for so long and y'all are all so comfortable using this process, but guess what? This part of it is changing and you have to adapt or you get left behind. So like keeping up with all the changes, the updates, I like to stay sharp on like, I like getting real time information on like all my sources on Twitter and, you know, just talking to people and networking and everything and just trying to think about how can I better my business and the service we're delivering our clients based on like what's now available that wasn't available yesterday. So
yeah, no, that's so well put. And though I think there's a double-edged sword to that because you can get caught in what I call like tool masturbation or shiny object syndrome of like, just fucking cut the tree down. If you have an axe, cut it down. But, you know, this guy has a chainsaw. Maybe I should look at how to use this chainsaw. This is incredible, but this guy has a laser. Oh, this laser was bullshit. And I spent 2 months learning how to operate this laser and it can't even cut through paper, let alone wood. So I'm with you though. I think that's, honestly, I think those are the best media buyers. And I think, I don't know, as we get older, I think it's more so getting minions around you to have the pulse of the network. That was one of the things at Triple Whale where Tommy was just so clued in on the ebbs and flows of D2C social that it was so easy to plug in where I didn't have to have keep tabs on that because it's hard sometimes, right? Being in a leadership role, but at the same time, you do want to stay at that cutting edge. But that's really good feedback, man.
Yeah, I mean, think about it, like even our group chat, like surround yourself with people that are really smart, really cool. They're friends, but they're doing slightly different shit than you are. And just in conversation, you pick up random things, right?
That's it.
Like, how do I know a lot of my finance stuff? Another group chat with like my best friend growing up, like he's like a wizard, PhD in statistics, Wharton, and runs like data at one of the big hedge funds. And just in conversation, we just enjoy talking about it. And I just get an inside look into his brain, you know? So
surround
yourself with those killers and where you want to be good. I'm not saying go out and make friends because they're smart people, but you are who you keep your company. You know?
I love it. Another absolute just call. I'm a mess today. I'm a mess. Okay, let's wrap this up. Let's land this plane, Mr. Snow. What is your equation of excellence? What do you think equation is, or excellence is a function of?
Excellence is a function of curiosity, number one. So simply, it's curiosity. It really just comes down to curiosity and work ethic.
Love that.
With you.
Love that.
So it's a function of both of those. So like, if you have a great work ethic, but you're in your own tunnel vision and you're just grinding and doing it, you'll do great, but you're not going to evolve with the times, right? If you're curious, you're staying up to date on what's going on around you in your bubble and grinding on the areas that you deem fit. Without the work ethic, like, I mean, it's so cliche to, you know, post about the 4-hour work week and all this and all that. There's no way I could have accomplished a tenth of what I did if I cut my hour, if I was working 40-hour work weeks, like on the come up. I'm not saying you should be, you know, working around the clock 7 days a week. I firmly believe that if you do that, like, you're going to crash and burn.
Yes.
Maybe you can do that for a decade, but after that, it's not sustainable and you become like your own worst enemy in that regard. But you do need to start somewhere. If you're looking to get to that like platform of where it's downhill sledding, like, you need to grind, you need to be curious, you need to just dig and like, just don't clock in, don't clock out. You have questions in your head, find the reason why. Like, I don't just
love
like
that.
I don't like, someone tells me something, I always say like, why or like how, like, so I need to understand how it works.
Yep.
Because that's how you memorize things. When you start to conceptualize how something is, then that's when it's like ingrained in your head. Like,
yeah.
I do my own mental math until I understand like why that is, you know?
It's beautiful, man. Curiosity and grit. I think it's absolutely it. And I love that idea too. It's almost like the Feynman technique. I know I've really mastered something when I can explain it to somebody that really doesn't have the foundational knowledge necessary to understand what I'm explaining.
So true.
Yeah, I love it. Jon Snow, go follow him on the Twitters. How can people get more involved? Are you guys taking more clients at the agency? Tell them about the newsy. Yeah. Tell them about the Twitters. This time's yours, my friend.
Oh, yeah. Yes, follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn. That's where I'm definitely most active. Always taking new clients in at the agency. Snow Agency, we were actually acquired a year ago by Avenue Z, so you might see both those names floating around. Cool. Always taking more clients.
What's the URL there?
AvenueZ.com.
Perfect.
Or thesnowagency.com.
Perfect.
Really looking for like Shopify Plus brands, holistic growth services. And yeah, I just launched the newsletter.
The Newsy.
Just launched the newsletter. Was like yesterday was number
three?
Six.
Or six. Yeah, oh my gosh, I'm behind.
So that was the sixth week. Yeah, so weekly
Let's
newsletter.
Let's go.
Give you a little inside look into what's hot on my mind for the week. So I mean, just D2C updates, a little bit of finance sprinkled in, a little bit of lifestyle.
Let's go.
And maybe some controversial stuff coming. Who knows? We'll see.
All the hot takes. Dude, you're just one of just master of life, awesomeness, a dentist, a media buyer, a great brother, a wonderful husband, just a magnificent friend. Go model yourself after this man. Wonderful muse. I did it. He had to do it, didn't he? I should have won that. I should have won that. I was coming. I had him scared. And damn it.
The only team I did not want to face.
Very on brand. Very on brand for the Cowboys. Very on brand for the Cowboys. All right, folks, that's it. That's all we got for another episode of Equation of Excellence. This one was in person, but I totally messed up the lighting. So we'll see what we can get from it. Go follow John, go do all the things, go hire the Snow Agency, and then go to firmatcommerce.com to book a demo, make my boss happy. And then we also have a great newsletter called Geometry Your Growth that goes out every Friday. And then lastly, we have a sister show with me doing a bunch of unboxings. So go check that out as well. John, thank you so much. And then if you guys are in town, I don't know actually when this is going to drop, maybe tomorrow, but John will be on a panel at the Founder Made and also joining us at our event. At the after party. So if you're in town, hit us up, Austin, Texas. John, you're the best. We got to get you the hotel, get you all dressed up for dinner later tonight. But thanks so much, man.